Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Ryan Finley, sports editor for the Union Tribune. Padres Mariners, it's the rivalry. Padres won a game last night, so they'll lose tonight, and then they'll win tomorrow, and it'll go on like that in perpetuity. No, that's the beauty. That's the beauty of going to the ballpark tonight is you go, will this be the night? Now, of course, they have won two in a row. It's been a week. They've not won more than two in a row since May 1st, I think, was when they won a third in a row. Well, Brian, lots to talk about, as there always is with this team. Where do you want to start?
Sure. They, not to correct you, they have not won two in a row. They lost Sunday.
No, I'm sorry. I've only been up for about 22 minutes, but I'm pretty sure what I said was they have not won two in a row.
No, that's true. And that's what we're going to, I mean, yes. And that's the thing that they have to figure out. And, you know, for our listeners, if you'd like to stress yourself out, cause some serious gastrointestinal problems on a Tuesday, do the math and figure out what the Padres will have to do between now and the end of the season to finish with the projected number of wins that most people had for them. And that would be win like two-thirds of their games. And for a team that can't win two in a row, it's hard to win two-thirds of your games when you can't win two in a row. So, so we'll see, you know, luckily,
I mean, to get even to what were they projected at, like 93 and a half or something. If we're talking about like Vegas or 92 or something like that, fan graphs. And just to get to like the minimum, it'll probably take to get to the playoffs. They've got to play like 15 over 500 for the rest of the way. So, I mean, you're talking about like 23 over 500, which okay, that's what they should be doing, but we've scrapped, right? We've thrown out what the Padres should be doing.
Right. Well, and you had a great line in your Padres Daily newsletter, I believe, the other day, where it's about time that we stop talking about using the word disappointing and using a shorter word, which is bad, which is at some point you cease to disappoint if you're just playing badly. You can't disappoint people if the expectations are low. That said, Kevin, I was sitting next to you last night at Petco Park. We saw what I would interpret as some very good signs in a 5-0 win over a very bad Cubs team. Manny Machado made, again, one of his patented incredible defensive highlight reel plays, had three hits, seems to be seeing the ball better, smoked one opposite field to the right center field gap, appeared to look more like the Manny Machado who can get on a heater at any minute and be the best player in baseball for long stretches. Blake Snell, who knows a thing or two about getting hot and being streaky, what, six shutout last night? Second start in a row. Looks like a playoff caliber pitcher. Looks like a top of the rotation pitcher. Kevin, is this a sign that things are changing, or is this just two good performances on one night?
The easy thing would be to say no. to give the perspective, you know what? There's 102 games left. There is plenty of time for them to get hot. Yes, time is running out. But yes, really good sign from Manny Machado. Now, look, the first single was flared, but the next two were smoked. One to left, one to right center, as you said. They all count the same. But to see him hit the ball like that was big. See him not chase was big. He's had three hit games before this season, but, you know, we weren't entirely sure he was healthy with the back early. We may never know. I'm not going to blame it on the back. He insisted and others insisted it wasn't a problem. Then you have the hand thing. So now he's out of this and he comes out and he has that night and he hit some balls hard in the first few games. I just think that, yes, that was a big sign. Yes. They still didn't get hits with runners in scoring position, but it's like the way they did it. Juan Soto and Fernando Tatis Jr. were both 0 for 4, right? Jake Cronenworth had a big hit and a big walk that, you know, look, fifth run, it didn't matter, but it was big. Josh Hader sits down. They're up by five going in the ninth. I mean, it was big. Gary Sanchez comes up big. Brandon Dixon had a big hit. Brandon Dixon, we could talk about that later, played it right. Yeah. I think it was good. That's sad. Like, tonight is just such an interesting game because this pattern has got to stop.
Well, it sounds so silly, and Kevin, we've said this before, to say that a Tuesday night game against the Mariners in June is a big game, but it kind of is. I mean, you're looking for signs that this is more than just one good night, one bad night, one good pitching performance, one bad pitching performance, 1-3-for-4 night, followed by an 0-for-3 night, right? Like, you're looking for momentum in a sport where I think momentum is really hard to capture.
Absolutely. It is. Like, I mean, the reality is, and we both have a friend who doesn't believe in momentum in a very passionate way, the same way he doesn't believe that any umpires are any good.
Yes, really good podcast.
Players believe in momentum. You can feel good about yourself, and that can translate to the field. And the Padres haven't, right? And it hasn't, that good feeling. That's what they're searching for. And I do think that has a lot to do with it. We're all looking for this one reason. It's Trent Grisham's fault. It's Austin Nola's fault. It's the hitting coach's fault. But there's a lot of reasons. And one of them is that the Padres can't feel good. They don't feel good about themselves offensively. There's a lot of things that players say that okay, I understand that's important to you. And if it's important to you playing this very difficult game, then go for it. But they've tired of it pretty much as everyone else has of talking about, maybe this will be what starts us. Now, of course, Manny did say some of those things last night. He actually said them very confident, like, this is how we're going to start playing. It wasn't maybe. I left them out because, you know what? I've quoted enough people saying that, and there were other interesting things about it. But Manny did say, this is what we're going to start doing. This is, and the fact is, and I've written about it, there have been signs, tangible signs. They might use the word momentum, but there have been tangible signs that this offense is getting better. I don't know if it will. That's the beauty of us still having 102 games to watch.
Absolutely. One guy who certainly is helping this offense go is Gary Sanchez. And of course, just like we all drew it up in March, Kevin, Gary, starting catcher Gary Sanchez. He's been hot. He hit a ball last night that looked like a tee shot at the driving range. I mean, it was still rising as it cleared the fence. This is a guy who leads the Padres in home runs, despite spending about 4.5 seconds on the team. This is somebody who is DHing when he's not catching. It sure seems like he's brought a spark.
But he has 3 times as many home runs as any other Padres catcher, which means his 3 home runs equal the home runs hit by Austin Nola, Luis Campisano, and Brett Sullivan. He has 6 hits, which, what's that now? 6 hits in like 24 at-bats. Austin Nola has 14 and 104 at-bats or 108 at-bats, whatever it is. Yes. Is this a surge that happens at times and when a guy comes to a team? It could be. I mean, Gary Sanchez hit 195 the previous 3 seasons.
Sure.
I forget what the OPS was. It was his OPS was a little subpar. So if, 195 would be an improvement over what Austin Nola was giving you. So, and with pitch calm, it really helps you hit the ground running. There was a time that Gary Sanchez was actually considered to have been a if not a plus catcher, to have had some good attributes. He may or may not have helped. Maybe Phil Cuzzi just stinks as an umpire. Maybe Gary Sanchez helped. I don't know. Blake Snell thought he did. This has been a fantastic. Here's what's undoubted. You cannot argue. It has been a fantastic addition for the first week.
Absolutely. I read a fun fact last night, Kevin, that the Cubs had actually posted, which is that Fernando Tatis Jr. is 2nd all-time in baseball in terms of the most home runs through 312 career games. The old round 312 game number that we all talk about. He is 2nd all-time. You know who's 4th? Gary Sanchez. Gary Sanchez had 90 home runs through his first 312 big league games. Fernando Tatis Jr. has 92. And so as much as we talk about how Fernando Tatis Jr. is a threat to go deep every time he is up, there was a time when Gary Sanchez was just as big a threat, which to me, and Gary Sanchez is not old. This is not 38-year-old Mike Piazza starting at catcher for the Padres, right? This is not bringing in somebody like that. This is a guy who could conceivably still be in the prime of his career if he could hit for a better average.
Could this be he's the Matt Carpenter the Yankees got last year, but not that dramatic because he's not that old and all that. Sure, that could be. Yeah. I mean, the reason you stunned me there is, first off, what possessed the Cubs to put that in their notes? And I should read the Cubs' notes more often. But I love that because we talk about, and look, I think Fernando Tatis Jr. is a fantastic player and will continue to be one, right? But if that doesn't put it in perspective for you, that a long career, a Hall of Fame career, takes a long time to build, then nothing will. Because Gary Sanchez was out of baseball, right?
Yeah.
He got a job on April 1st to play catcher for the AAA team of the San Francisco Giants and then lost that job. And that's an amazing stat, Ryan. Like, I will think about that stat all day because of the perspective.
Right. He was a backup Fresno Grizzly, right? And now he's starting in the big leagues, but certainly has brought some of that sock that the Padres were missing. Kevin, I buy into your theory too, which is it doesn't matter so much whether your catcher, your center fielder are hitting, if your big four are hitting. In watching this team, my frustration is that it doesn't seem like they could ever get even three of the four guys kind of on the same page. You know, right now, just as Manny seems to be turning the corner.
Yeah, no, that I like that you put the three of the four because we knew that the weaknesses, right? And maybe if there was a mistake on those of us assessing the team and all that, it was maybe not accounting for the and the guys building the team, more importantly, not accounting for the downside of like, okay, we know that the top of our lineup's going to carry the lineup. It's okay if the bottom isn't as good. Like, we can't really afford it to be much better.
Right.
But they maybe didn't account for, well, what if three of the four guys aren't going? Like, they're going to go, right? Because, like, look at their history. They're going to be great. And that'll make up for if Grisham hits 210. Oh, but what if Grisham hits 180? Well, that'll make up for if Austin Nola hits 220. Uh-oh, what if Austin Nola hits 130? You know, that'll make up for Jake Cronenworth hitting 240. Oh, no, what if Jake Cronenworth's hitting 200? Like, so it all went bad. Like, the Mariners are coming to town. There's a team. They got really good pitching, and they're hitting with not as loaded as the Padres, about the same. I think they got like four guys with OPS pluses of over 100. Same with the Padres. I think they may have some better batting averages and OPSs than the Padres at the bottom end. But like, they're struggling. They're 29-30. They've kind of turned it around a little bit, it seems. They did just run into the Yankees, and I think the Yankees take 2 or 3. But like, bad things happen to good teams.
And the good teams play poorly.
For that to be happening, they need those guys at the top to not have the slumps that these guys are having.
Right, and if your superstars are slumping, you're going to need unexpected production from people. And one of those guys, and this segues into my next point, is Brandon Dixon. This is a guy who, and Kevin, you know, I have a little tiny history with him, covered him in college. Our colleague Jeff Sanders, follows Brandon Dixon from kind of a Murrieta angle, because Sanders, like me, used to work in the Temecula Murrieta office in the North County Times. This is a guy who we've all been following after not getting a hit for what seemed like, 40 at bats with them towards the end of last season and the start of this season. He really seems to have picked it up to the point where last night, and yes, it was because of an injury, but last night, Brandon Dixon was the starting right fielder for your San Diego Padres.
That is what happens. And that is something that you celebrate when the big four is going good, right? Like I wrote about the Dodgers the other day, right? And I'm going to get to Brandon Dixon. You're making, great, good points here. But like, that's awesome. Because, but he went 1-for-4 and he played an okay right field. Like, now that's all you need him to do if Manny's going 3-for-4, right? If Jake Cronenworth gets a big hit, if Gary Sanchez, is going well, not that I'm including him in the big four. Right. Like, that's all you need. The problem is, like, Brandon Dixon's been pretty good here for 10 games.
Mm-hmm. What has that shown? Yeah, how have they done? Yeah.
Right? Like, Trent Grisham, for the love of God, for like 12 games, had a 500 on base percentage here recently. It didn't show. Manny wasn't playing. Bogarts has been hurt. Tatis up and down. Yes, Brandon Dixon, that was big. Here's why. Trent Grisham goes down, has back spasms, could keep him out for a couple days. They move Fernando Tatis Jr. over to center field. Was this a move that may have happened at some point anyway? Probably, if Grisham kept struggling. Bryce Miller wrote about it, that it needed to happen just the day before. And the problem that I had with it, though I understood it, but the question I had, was, what's going to happen in right? Because you have a gold glover caliber in right and a gold glove caliber in center. And I know you can't keep going with a guy hitting 180, but we really sort of can't quantify what has happened that this part of the field, the from center, from basically like a little bit of left center over to the right field line, it's shut down basically.
Right.
Are balls in the gaps going to start falling, or some of the plays Tatis has been making? Is Tatis going to be as good in center as Grisham? I mean, there was, to me, that was a big deal, and could still be a big deal. So that was good. Nice start for Brandon Dixon in right.
Sure. And when you play half your games at, to quote Nick Canepa here, when you play half your games at Petco National Park, I mean, you need to have a guy who can go get it, right? And nobody, I mean, really, I mean, and this is a total compliment to Grisham, and Bryce Miller's column was absolutely spot on in terms of he has become a liability with his bat.
Yep.
The fact is, few players since Mike Cameron that I can think of in Padre history are better catching the ball, getting under balls. How, I can't tell you how many times, Kevin, watching on TV, the ball off the bat, I go, uh-oh. And then the camera angle changes and Grisham runs it down.
That's a good perspective, right?
And you just go, oh, well, that's a double, and it's not. I guess the question that I have for you here, Kevin, is do you think it's reached a point where a change is needed in center field? And if not, what is the point in which a change would be needed in center field?
Not my job to say. That's Bryce Miller's job.
That's very true. Your job is to observe and report.
Here's my perspective. I remember last year, and I honestly, I can't remember what his the name is blanking me now, but I'll tell you the story, and it'll still be if you'll overlook that I can't remember anything right now. But the Padres went and played the Phillies in May and took 2 out of 3. And there were some pretty significant plays in a couple of the games involving who was playing center field for them at that time. And he was terrible. And the Phillies weren't good. Uh-huh. The Phillies made a trade for the Angels center fielder.
Yep.
Is it Marsh? Yep.
Brandon Marsh, yes.
Now, I think he hit a bit, but we all know what happened with the Phillies in their season last year. But when the Padres played the Phillies later in the season and then in the National League Championship Series, there were some plays that stuck out that is like in May against the Phillies, those would have been hits.
Right.
That's big. That's one little piece of anecdotal evidence I can give you, right? Mm-hmm. That helped the Phillies turn around by having better defense. Mm-hmm. There are lots of teams that have suspect defenders out in the outfield, but those guys can hit.
Yes.
But you know what? Those guys can hit. Right? Like they're really good hitters. It's the Padres. Here's my thing. The Padres are not talking about replacing Trent Grisham with Kyle Schwarber, which is make you laugh, but they're not talking about replacing Trent Grisham in the lineup with a guy who is going to have an 850 OPS.
Right.
So to me, I just don't know. That's my question. And, you know, like I said, it's not my job, but that's my question is like, is it really worth it when you're sacrificing that defense?
Well, it's the old coaching. It's the old fire the coach thing, right? Where they go, hey, you know, you should fire the manager or the coach. You go, cool. Who are you going to get? And then people get quiet. You know,
I think it's even worse. I'll tell you this. I'm with you. I'm with you on your premise of that. Right. I think a center fielder is more valuable than a manager in a lot of ways. He's tangibly more valuable. And so it's like, you fire Bob Melvin, let's say, and replace him with you. Do we really know how much better or worse you were than Bob Melvin?
No, I'm only as good as my players.
We know how good this new center fielder is or how bad he's going to be. Right. And again, if you're telling me this, that you're doing this, if you're doing this in July, because you moved Tatis to center and you traded for a corner outfielder with an 850 OPS or 800 OPS, then I say that's the move that, I mean, like that makes all the sense in the world to me.
Right.
So.
Right. You go get 2018's version of Franmil Reyes and you put him in right field and then you keep Trent Grisham and he enters in the fifth inning of all games in which the Padres lead, right? move Tatis to right, Gershman back to center. You know, all of a sudden you can play that game a little bit. Yeah, the question is, who's walking through that door? This is not a team that I think wants to spend more premium dollars on somebody to play right field in June.
If they're in it, I think they will. I don't know what premium means. I don't know who this is, but if they're in it and Grisham is struggling, I think they do because they're in. That's a big question, and it's a big part of what happens over here over the next month.
Sure. Yeah, can we talk Xander Bogaerts for a minute?
Yeah.
Our Jeff Sanders had something in today's paper that, you know, Bogaerts basically the cure for the mystery wrist ailment that he has apparently had his whole pro career or major league career is a cortisone shot. He got a cortisone shot earlier in the season or in spring, Kevin, in spring.
In March. Yeah.
In March. He got it in March. Doctors say that you can't get another one for X number of days. And apparently he can't get another one now. He is pursuing an alternate course of treatment and kind of doesn't want to talk about it. Are we at the point now, but insists that he can't or shouldn't or won't go on the injured list? I have sort of two questions for you, and they're both unfair. Number one, is it his decision whether or not he goes on the injured list? Because to me, that he seems to imply that it is. Two, is this something that rest can heal, or is this just something he's going to have to play through based on what you know?
Well, I think Xander purposely has talked in circles about this for like a month, right?
Yes. Yes.
He wants to play. On his side is the evidence that, you know, his numbers have been really good and something that he's dealt with this like for long stretches, maybe not this bad this long, but he's dealt with every year since 2017. Numbers have been there. So that's on his side. It certainly seems that this would have been a real nice time to get some rest. But then again, like we're just assuming that he would have this rest and come back magically better. Whereas he in the past has taken a couple days and come back better.
Right.
No one's willing to say what it is, though they're saying that they're leaving it up to Xander. Now, listen, we're in an era where like I get these emails like send a guy to AAA or bench him or whatever. It's pretty rare you see that now because these guys make a lot of money.
Sure.
It's not like the NBA where I think the players more run the league.
Sure.
But you know, there's only so much you're doing here with a $25 million guy.
Sure. By the way, you're not paying him $25 million to sit him either. I mean, he should play every day, especially if you need to win games. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yes. But he's looked terribly uncomfortable here for the last few, more so than just like the, what the results are. He's looked uncomfortable. So, and this would, like I said, they're off on Thursday. They're off on Monday. You know, that gives you, means you're only missing, you know, it would have been eight. He can go retroactive, would have been 8 days. I think a decision probably needs to be made here by tomorrow, maybe even today, that he's got to go on or not. But they were thinking that he would play today. Honestly, I wish I had more answers, but like I've looked back and no one has ever said what this is. And I think because I don't know that it's ever reached this point where it's like this bad for this long.
Sure. Sure. What I thought was interesting and Kevin, you've told me, and Jeff has told me, I mean, Xander Bogaerts is a pretty stand-up guy in terms of players on the team being forthcoming, good, by all accounts, a good guy. And I know good can mean lots of things, but by all accounts, a good guy. I mean, he essentially said in the Jeff Sanders story today, essentially, look at all my silver bats before you tell me whether or not I can play through this. I mean, that to me, that was as kind of firm as I've seen him be about this, where he goes, hey, I had it this year, won a silver slugger. Had it the next year, won a silver slugger. So, yeah, I'll be fine. The recent numbers don't necessarily reflect that, but
right. And I'm all for that. I respect that.
Yeah.
But at some point history becomes history, right? Like it's in the past and you know, what's happening right now and what's best for this team. So yes, I it is a perplexing situation. It's obviously a chronic thing. But it only, for those who haven't followed along, closely, it's something that needs to be aggravated. He's fine, and then he gets hit by a pitch or runs into somebody or something awkward happens. And this year, he's sort of talked in like, who knows how much is what he said is true. I'm not calling him a liar. What I'm saying is he hasn't wanted to make an excuse. So maybe he hasn't been entirely forthcoming about when it's bothered him, but it just kind of doesn't line up. He got hit by a pitch on April 18th. He got the cortisone shot. He said he felt fine for 3 weeks. Got hit by a pitch on April 18th, said he felt fine for another couple weeks. Then it just started hurting miraculously, or not miraculously, it just started hurting. And it's like, well, wait. But now he's saying that the hit by pitch must be it. And so it all kind of doesn't line up. But to your point, to his point, he has been the player he's been with this as a problem for 7 years.
Sure. And a very brief comment. Sure is nice to have Ha-Sung Kim as a fill-in shortstop. When he goes down, because he has made some plays.
Fill in shortstop, fill in third baseman, fill in, whatever. Now I'm not saying he's Manny at third, but he made some real nice plays. Yes, Ha-Sung Kim is to this point on a team that's five under, and it's weird to say when Soto just fell below 900 OPS, Ha-Sung Kim is maybe your most valuable player.
Wow. 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 Kevin, we've just got a couple minutes left. Ty France, Matt Brash, Andres Munoz, and the Seattle Mariners come to town. I know for many fans that when you see the Mariners, it is a reminder of a lot of the players who have been traded away. Where are they sort of in their season, and who will you be watching just in terms of guys on their roster?
Well, they're 29 and 30. Rodriguez has like a 242 batting average. I don't know, six something OPS. But over the last 2 weeks has got onto a sort of Juan Soto-esque tear where it's like a nine something, closer to 1,000 OPS over the last like 14, 15 games. Ty France having about the same season, maybe a little less than his all-star breakout season last year. Their offense a little bit down. They're struggling at DH as well. But their pitching has saved them. The Padres have seen Logan Gilbert three or four times. He's starting tonight against Joe Musgrove. Tomorrow night is George Kirby against Michael Wacha. George Kirby in his last outing shut out the Yankees for eight innings.
Yeah.
The outing before that, I think it was the Pirates or somebody, roughed him up. But this is a really good young pitcher. So is Logan Gilbert. I think five and a third, one earned run. Five. He faced the Padres twice. Didn't go six either time, but didn't allow any real damage either. So, but Padres have two of their better guys on the mound as well too. Joe Musgrove's coming off two really good starts, looking like Joe Musgrove. So who knows? Maybe we got some 2-1 games here where we can still complain about the offense, but maybe they won.
Right. It's the old natural rivalry, right? Anytime the Seattle Mariners come to town, Fedder Cup, or there's probably some sort of Peoria perpetual trophy that goes past back and forth. Anyway, should be interesting.
It's an odd one, but I'm not sure who the Padres' natural rival is supposed to be. So
they think it's the Dodgers. Like, Dodgers don't.
The Rangers and Astros aren't natural rivals because they're in the American League. But so it's like the Diamondbacks and the Astros or something.
Correct. That is their natural rival. Thank you, Bud Selig.
Yeah.
That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast for Kevin Acey. Kevin, it was good doing this. Sorry we couldn't do one last week. That was on me. We will talk soon before they head to Denver to take on the Colorado Rockies. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.